You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Okay, let's get into our next conversation now. I want us to focus on South Africa's corruption problem. Corruption remains among one of the most pressing problems in the country. It occurs not just in the public, but in the private sector as well. And the effects are there. Effects on our democracy, on our human rights. You have institutions that are deteriorated. You know, public trust in government that is diminished. That is our reality. And it's deeply embedded. And I think it's going to take a deliberate, conceited effort over years. It's not just to happen overnight, but over years to defeat corruption. So how are we doing in fixing what is wrong and defeating this cancer of corruption? I imagine that from the very top, that's where things need to change. They are going to be part of the solution because, quite frankly, they are a big part of the problem too, aren't they? So let's look at the history of corruption in South Africa's politics and its links to colonialism, apartheid. I know Professor Stephen Friedman, who is my guest, and I'll introduce him shortly, has previously argued that corruption in South Africa is deeply rooted in the country's past, and that matters when we analyze these issues. But there's a role of civil society, right? Civil society has got to play a role in the fight against corruption. You and I, as individual citizens, need to play a role. Legislation needs to come in. Is it even enough? So let's have a chat about that. Or maybe you are one of those that think, oh, Clement, you're being naive. Corruption has always been there and has existed, and it's as old as mankind, and it is here to stay. But I would argue, how do we manage it? How do we ensure that there's accountability so that people don't continue with thinking they can go and be corrupt and there's no accountability? Because what that does is show somebody else that they can do it too, and nothing's going to happen to them. 011-883-0702. That's where you can call in to weigh in on this discussion, or on the WhatsApp line on 072-702-1702. Professor Stephen Friedman is a research professor at the University of Johannesburg. Prof, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, Seven. Thank you.
We also have Kavisha Pillay, who is the head of campaigns at Corruption Watch. Kavisha, thank you for making time. Hi.
Hi, Kevin.
Prof, let's start with you. Where do we trace corruption? I mentioned earlier that we'll also talk about the links to our past, because you've got to locate it within our context and our history. What is your assessment?
Well, I mean, it is very deeply rooted in our past. I mean, the first corrupt person to have a position of authority in South Africa was a guy called Jan van Riebeck, who arrived here in 1652 because he worked for the Dutch East India Company, and he'd been guilty of corruption in Vietnam, and they were giving him a second chance. You know, we talked today about state capture. The earliest example of state capture in South Africa was in the Cape Colony, you know, where basically business interests controlled the government, and you know, the famous or infamous Cecil John Rhodes had to resign because one of his contacts had been given a catering concession in a dodgy way, etc. So the first point to bear in mind is that whether the government has been white English speakers or white Afrikaans speakers or black people, there's been corruption, and it's been pretty deeply rooted. But I think for our present situation, we need to go back to the last years of apartheid, where corruption really became a major, I mean, it had always been an issue, but it really escalated. And the reason it escalated is that the South African, you know, apartheid at that stage government had an anti-sanctions campaign, which basically legalized illegality. You know, sanctions were international law, so you had to break the law in order to try to beat them. And that led to all sorts of corruption. Then after 1994, you know, people coming back from exile, etc., hooked into that corruption. Mm-hmm. So you had people who'd been on the opposite sides of the fence during the battle, you know, against apartheid, who suddenly found themselves on the same side in the same corrupt networks, trying to take advantage of the citizenry. So in that sense, it's very deeply rooted in our past. I think also when one talks about corruption being deeply embedded, you also have to look at what's been happening with our economy over the last 30 years or so, and how that relates to corruption. Because, you know, the short story about our economy over the last 30 years is that it's not an easy economy to get into, if I can put it that way. You know, particularly if you're born in a township or a shack settlement, even if you've got very good ideas and you're energetic, etc., you know, there are all sorts of barriers which stop you getting in to a large extent. And in that situation, people use politics to try to get the kind of wealth and the kind of status which they can't get from the marketplace. And that's why, you know, I've often made the point that if you want to understand local government in this country, you have to understand that in many parts of our country, the difference between being a councillor and losing your seat is the difference between being middle class and poor. And that means that, you know, when a councillor gets up in the morning, they don't say to themselves, how am I going to serve the people who voted for me? They say to themselves, how am I going to find a way to stay in the middle class?
So,
so all of these things really ensure that corruption is deeply embedded.
Yeah.
The only other point I want to make about our present situation is, and we must always be very careful to point out in these when you give these backgrounds, that none of us is saying that corruption is excusable. None of it's saying that it's a good idea. It's simply telling people where we came from and what the nature of the problem is.
Yeah.
If you look at the history of this country, you see that when the British ran the country, British business basically was favored and got all sorts of concessions, the famous mine owners and so on. When white Afrikaans speakers ran the country, same thing. These big companies, Sanlam, General Mining, etc. Since 1994, we haven't had the same thing. We haven't had a situation in which suddenly very big black-owned companies are running the country. And that means that some people who are ambitious, you know, who want to accumulate wealth, etc., decide in a nutshell that corruption is the way to get there.
Yeah.
So all of these factors mean that, you know, we're dealing with a huge problem which is embedded in our past since at least 1652.
Yeah.
And it's very much a consequence.
Yeah, is there commitment?
You know, economic realities.
Yeah. Is there commitment, Prof, to deal, I mean, you've done a great job at helping us understand the historical context. And as you say, no one says corruption is excusable. And I don't think there's even an argument that, get used to it. Get used to it. It's as old as mankind. It's here to stay. But it's how you manage it. It's the processes you put in place. It's the civil society you have. It's the attitudes and the behaviors you encourage of individuals. From your own assessment, have we demonstrated not only government or the political system or the civil, but even as individual citizens, have we demonstrated our commitment to defeat this cancer of corruption?
Well, it's a good question, Clement, because, I mean, you know, if you ask everybody, everybody makes very flowery speeches about how bad corruption is. But the short answer to your question is, well, no, not really, in a whole lot of ways. Because, look, first of all, you know, we have to acknowledge what the real problem is, which I've talked about. We need an economy in this country which young, ambitious people can rise to the top in. We need an economy which, you know, enables people to feel that they can make it in the marketplace rather than use politics to get rich. But obviously, even if we were to start doing that tomorrow, we're not going to do that in the next couple of years, and you can't tell people to carry on putting up with large amounts of corruption until we sort that problem out.
Absolutely. Let me bring in Kavisha Pillay now. Kavisha, you guys at Corruption Watch have done an incredible job at least giving us a picture of how bad things look, or even when things are improving on the corruption front. I know you often release these reports every year where you highlight the types of corruption that have continued to affect the country, even, you know, post-democracy, in this context now, post the pandemic. What kind of trends are you seeing in terms of the corruption South Africans experience?
Thanks, Cameron. So we encourage the public to report incidences of corruption to us, and what that helps us to understand, and this is all, you know, crowdsourced information, is just the experiences of people, you know, sort of living daily in South Africa. And the vast majority of these complaints relate to what is termed as petty corruption, which is not a great term because it doesn't necessarily give the seriousness to what people are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. But it's, for example, being asked to pay bribes by police officers, schools that are classified as no fees, quintile one schools are forcing parents to pay school fees, or children aren't able to access the school nutrition program because, you know, there's corruption in a procurement system there, or somebody having to bribe to get into a hospital and to get treatment, etc. And what we're seeing is that the vast majority of complaints that we receive relate to accessing basic services and human rights. And I think that is the, you know, part of the conversation that we don't always pay attention to. You know, over the years, there seems to have been a little bit of an obsession of talking about the millions and trillions and the effects on the economy, and all of that is 100% important. But I think what we're also not realizing is that corruption is one of the main barriers of accessing and realizing human rights in South Africa. And we're seeing this on a day-to-day basis with people coming forward with this type of information. But what it's also telling us is that, you know, there's a bit of a culture of corruption, not a bit, but there is a culture of corruption that has settled into the society. So you were talking about, well, you know, are we taking this seriously, you know, as a nation, you know, are we doing our best in order to curb this problem? And it's a difficult one because, you know, in some instances, what we're seeing is that people are willing to take advantage of a corrupt system if it means that they'll avoid consequences. So if I am driving under the influence and a police officer has pulled me over, you know, there's this sort of willingness to pay that 200 rand because I don't want to sit in jail for over the weekend. You know, we sort of heard this experience from young people that we were engaging with who were saying to us, well, they actually are budgeting for their bribes. You know, so they're planning to go out, they're planning to, you know, drink and drive. So let's save an extra 500 rand to bribe the metro police so, you know, nothing is going to happen to us. And though that's a scary reality because I think that, you know, in terms of accountability, and you mentioned this earlier, is that if we have to see accountability, if we have to see people facing consequences for their corrupt behavior, chances are people would not be so willing to also participate in a corrupt system. But it does work both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take a quick ad break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Professor Stephen Friedman and Kavisha Pillay. And I'll take your calls and some of your WhatsApp voice notes as well. It's going up to 10 before 11. Attitudes and the behaviors you encourage of individuals. From your own assessment, have we demonstrated not only government or the political system or the civil, but even as individual citizens, have we demonstrated our commitment to defeat this cancer of corruption?
It's a good question, Clement, because, I mean, you know, if you ask everybody, everybody makes very flowery speeches about how bad corruption is. But the short answer to your question is, well, no, not really, in a whole lot of ways. Because, look, first of all, you know, we have to acknowledge what the real problem is, which I've talked about. We need an economy in this country which young, ambitious people can rise to the top in. We need an economy which, you know, enables people to feel that they can make it in the marketplace rather than use politics to get rich. But obviously, even if we were to start doing that tomorrow, we're not going to do that in the next couple of years, and you can't tell people to carry on putting up with large amounts of corruption until we sort that problem out.
Absolutely. Let me bring in Kavisha Pillay now. Kavisha, you guys at Corruption Watch have done an incredible job at least giving us a picture of how bad things look, or even when things are improving on the corruption front. I know you often release these reports every year where you highlight the types of corruption that have continued to affect the country, even, you know, post-democracy, in this context now, post the pandemic. What kind of trends are you seeing in terms of the corruption South Africans experience?
Thanks, Clement. So we encourage the public to report incidences of corruption to us, and what that helps us to understand, and this is all, you know, crowdsourced information, is just the experiences of people, you know, in, sort of living daily in South Africa. And the vast majority of these complaints relate to what is termed as petty corruption, which is not a great term because it doesn't necessarily give the seriousness to what people are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. But it's, for example, being asked to pay bribes by police officers, schools that are classified as no fees, quintile one schools are forcing parents to pay school fees, or children aren't able to access the school nutrition program because, you know, there's corruption in a procurement system there, or somebody having to bribe to get into a hospital and to get treatment, etc. And what we're seeing is that the vast majority of complaints that we receive relate to accessing basic services and human rights. And I think that is the, you know, part of the conversation that we don't always pay attention to. You know, over the years, there seems to have been a little bit of an obsession of talking about the millions and trillions and the effects on the economy, and all of that is 100% important. But I think what we're also not realizing is that corruption is one of the main barriers of accessing and realizing human rights in South Africa. And we're seeing this on a day-to-day basis with people coming forward with this type of information. But what it's also telling us is that, you know, there's a bit of a culture of corruption, not a bit, but there is a culture of corruption that has settled into the society. So you were talking about, well, you know, are we taking this seriously, you know, as a nation, you know, are we doing our best in order to curb this problem? And it's a difficult one because, you know, in some instances, what we're seeing is that people are willing to take advantage of a corrupt system if it means that they'll avoid consequences. So if I am driving under the influence and a police officer has pulled me over, you know, there's this sort of willingness to pay that 200 rand because I don't want to sit in jail for over the weekend. You know, we sort of heard this experience from young people that we were engaging with who were saying to us, well, they actually are budgeting for their bribes. You know, so they're planning to go out, they're planning to, you know, drink and drive. So let's save an extra 500 rand to bribe the Metro Police so, you know, nothing is going to happen to us. And though that's a scary reality because I think that, you know, in terms of accountability, and you mentioned this earlier, is that if we had to see accountability, if we had to see people facing consequences for their corrupt behavior, chances are people would not be so willing to also participate in a corrupt system. But it does work both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take a quick ad break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Professor Stephen Friedman and Kavisha Pillay. And I'll take your calls and some of your WhatsApp voice notes as well. It's going up to 10 before 11.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702. Let's walk the talk.
And this half hour, we are discussing South Africa's corruption problem. We have been, it's been explained to us the history and just the historical context around corruption. Kavisha Pillay from Corruption Watch has also spoken about how people take advantage of the corrupt system. And I see some of you sending your WhatsApp messages. One person says, Clement, corruption has been around since the age of time, and so has selflessness. It's all dependent on your values and principles and where they lie. So, Prof, is that where we need to start? Inculcating good values and principles in people for when they are still young, so that when they grow older and they become, I don't know, a cop or a judge or just an ordinary citizen, they don't think the easiest way to go out is to pay a bribe, is to be corrupt? Or do we need to start thinking about legislation so that we make sure that there's legislation that ensures accountability, and that is going to in some way, you know, serve as a hindrance for people when they are thinking or considering being corrupt and they look at what the consequences are?
Yeah, look, I obviously that second point is essential. Look, I don't think this is about, you know, there's some good people and there's some bad people. It depends on the situation you're in. I mean, to be quite frank, if you are a comfortable middle-class person, you know, your pressures to be corrupt are a lot smaller than if you're born in poverty. That's you know, the reality we have to take seriously. Now, I don't think legislation is the issue. We've got plenty of legislation. Obviously, the justice system has a role to play in this. And I think it's very important when you talk about people's responsibility. I think we need to have fair and realistic standards for how we judge the justice system. Because you hear it said in this country repeatedly, oh, there's no accountability, nobody's ever put on trial, etc. I mean, for heaven's sake, the former president is on trial for corruption. The secretary general of the governing party is on trial for corruption. I'm told that, you know, about 100 cases are pending against people in municipalities. So it's simply not true. The justice system is beginning to operate in that way. But I think it's also, and that isn't about people being moral or immoral, it's also about the standards you set in society, you see. I mean, the more people see that there are double standards, the more we have a problem. So in corporate life, for example, you know, you have people in senior positions very often who complain like mad about the corruption below them. And then when you look at it a bit deeply, you say, you know, you see how much of a company's resources they use kind of automatically on their private you know, purposes. So you send your PA out to fetch your kids from school, and you, all of which is a form of petty corruption. So, you know, if we're going to start sending messages to the people a bit lower down, if you put it that way, then that message needs to be sent by the behavior of people at the top. And, of course, that's very true of politicians as well. One set of values which we really should look at in our society is that very often South Africans tend to judge people, you know, by how much they own and whether you have a fancy car, etc., etc. And that's never a very good idea, but it's a very bad idea when 80% of the population can't afford those things. So you really are kind of sending a message to people to say, you know, look, if you want to have status and you want people to respect you, you better go out and steal things because otherwise they won't respect you. And that, you know, that's about the messages we send out to people in our behavior and in the values we hold.
Yeah. And Kavisha, what do you think is the role of leadership? Because I said earlier that, you know, leadership will play a key role in helping defeat this corruption, whether it's leadership at a political level, leadership in government, that's going to play an important role, except in this case, you're dealing with leadership that itself is implicated, leadership that itself sometimes demonstrates no appetite and commitment to go after those that are corrupt.
Definitely, Clement. I mean, I think there's the answer already. Is that while we are in the state that we're in is because we don't have leaders who want to be personally accountable, but also collectively accountable for, you know, the environment that we find ourselves in right now. And that is deeply problematic. So you can't, you know, talk about, you know, corruption in these big sort of speeches and say this in the statements that, you know, oh, we're wanting to root out corruption, but, you know, not necessarily taking the steps to do so. And obviously that does create, as I was speaking about earlier, this culture in the society that if our leaders aren't behaving in a way that speaks to, you know, that embodies principles of transparency and accountability and ethics and morals, you know, we can't expect the society, you know, to be any different. And I think that's what's difficult right now as well, is that there are a lot of good people in South Africa. You know, as Prof. Friedman was saying, is that people aren't, you know, don't wake up to say, I want to be corrupt today. It is, you know, because of histories of inequality and oppression, there's no, some, for a lot of people, there's no other choice but to participate in the system. But then that's why we need our leaders to fix the system, so that you don't have to be corrupt in order to survive in South Africa.
Absolutely. Jeez. Thank you so much. It's a multifaceted approach, and it's not as easy as you're moral or you're immoral. And there are so many things that need to work in order for people not to even consider that corruption as an option. Kavisha Pillay, head of campaigns at Corruption Watch, Professor Stephen Friedman, research professor at the University of Johannesburg. Thank you so much for making time.